All right. Hello, and everybody who just joined for the next talk. The next one is going to be about a cool topic that I also experience. I think everybody who works alone or develops alone or in a small team knows the problem where you just have an idea, you start working, you use some temporary assets or some stuff from the asset store, and then at some point you look at it and it's kind of completely off. So, that's why I'm really looking forward to the talk about how to fix that issue. We have Simone Mendel with over 15 years of experience in art design, concept design, and art direction. So give her a big applause and thank you.
All right. Yeah, thank you everyone for showing up. When I submitted this talk, I wasn't sure, like an art talk at Godot Fest, like how many people are going to find this interesting. Super quick intro, like you've already done a fantastic job. My name is Simone Mendel. You can find me under this handle on most platforms. I did art direction for indie games for a long time. I also did graphics and motion design. I did concept art and 2D graphics for games, and since 2020, I'm making games together with my partner Joseph. This is our company name. Cats Organized Neatly is probably the most well-known game that we've made. We also did some other stuff. Virtual Cottage was like my first project that I did with Godot, and which was really fun. It also got decently popular. Then just for some artist street credit, like this is some of my personal work. Very colorful, very stylized. And then this is some stuff I did for clients. This was a background for an animation. And then this one I also got to art direct, where we made this little chicken Tamagotchi thing. And then week after week, I got to do concept art for outfits for that chicken. And this was a really fun project as well. All right, so disclaimer. I cut a lot of slides because I picked the 25-minute slots. So I want to focus on like the absolute basics and essentials and just really drill some concepts into your head. So if I'm sounding repetitive, that's why. I also can't make you an art director in 25 minutes. Like, that's not going to happen. But I can try and give you enough tips that hopefully you can make a better call when directing your next game. All right, so what does an art director do? Most people think of style guides. These are two style guides that I've worked on. That is one big part, and that is also something that you do if you work with a bigger team. But most of the job actually looks like this. The snipping tool is my best friend, and I just snip things and draw arrows. And if you talk to any art director, they can probably confirm that that's like 90% of the job. So today I want to kind of teach you, like, what do I look for when I draw these arrows? Oh, also, this is from yesterday's talk. Like, I had to, from the Blender talk, I had to take a photo of that because I found it really cute. All right, let's start with, in my opinion, the most important concept that you need to grasp. And that is, if you have a game, just take a screenshot and turn it to black and white and look at the contrast. This is the first thing I often do if I am art directing a game or if I'm asked to work on a game and just check it. Because art direction is all about like keeping your art style consistent, but it's also about visual clarity and like, can you even find your character, right? So contrast is like the most important thing. That's like even more important than like keeping all of your outlines the same thickness or like keeping the pixel count the perfect amount. So in most cases, this is also more important than color. I have an example here. If you have, for example, a side-scroller or 2D platformer environment, in the daytime, if you just look outside, things are darker the closer they are to you and lighter the further they get away from you. This is because there's like particles in the environment, there's fog, there is stuff. At nighttime, this is kind of reversed. Of course, there is no light, things are dark. The further they are away from you, the darker they are. If we kind of put numbers or values to this darkness and lightness stuff, in the daytime things have more contrast because there is light, obviously. At night they have less contrast, which also makes sense. So what happens if we want to add platforms to this? Okay, daytime, things are closer to me. I still have the whole range of like from 55 to 100% darkness. I can just slap some platforms in there, easy, problem solved. But what happens in the dark scene? Like that doesn't really work. Like platforms aren't just like really bright because they're very close to me. So what we do here is we just create the highest point of contrast where we want the gameplay to be, like where we want the focus to be. And I brought this example from Celeste. They also do this in their light scene. Like you can see the really nice transition from like the closer the assets are to you, the darker they are, and then they get further away and become lighter. And then with their dark scene, which I find very interesting, they use snow and like the high contrast metal grades to just communicate like these are platforms. And like this stuff is way more important than like every asset looking like perfectly consistent with one another. I'm gonna gloss over this fairly quickly because we also do this in art. This is a wonderful concept from Guild Wars 2. And what we do is we call it value grouping. We basically decide like, hey, if this thing is very close to us, then we're not gonna add like more highlights than it needs to. We stay within that group. And then we also do that for background stuff. If you put that together, this is what creates the visual clarity. Like each element is readable, but it has enough detail and shading in itself. So just that you've heard that term. But let's move on to games. Silksong is a perfect example because what they do is they actually have these four different layers. Like they have their black silhouettes, the one in the front, then they have their gameplay layer, and their gameplay layer actually has like thick outlines. It has black next to white, like that's the highest contrast, right? Then they have the layer behind it, which I'm guessing uses the same asset, just softens a lot, like the contrast is way lower. And then they don't even have outlines in the background. Like, what is that? That's not really consistent. But what they do is they blur everything. Like, it doesn't need any outlines. It just needs to be there to, like, give some depth. And then also, like, that layer has the least contrast. Okay. Now that we've talked about contrast, I quickly want to move on to colors. Color is pretty interesting. It's made up of three things. Hue, which is your color names. It's like your red, your orange, your blue. Then saturation, also kind of self-explanatory. Is it like very saturated or is it not saturated? And then brightness, is it light pink or is it like a dark burgundy red? And what color your game is really depends on you. There is no right or wrong choice there. What you have to keep in mind is that red is very, very prominent in most cultures. So red kind of has a significance. As humans, if we see red, we automatically look at it more than like a green. Green is also kind of a special case because in digital art, if you see the color wheel at the top, like we can go so green. Like the green that we have in digital art is like not normal. Like if you ever look at nature, the green that you see in nature is very desaturated. It's almost like yellowish. Like, yeah, you get it from those two pictures. That's also why I picked the picture from Hades, because they actually use that digital art green, but they use it in a kind of desaturated way. So yeah, if you do nature, blue and green are kind of your friends, and keep your saturation in mind. And now, colors are affected by their environment. If we talk about saturation, like everything that's not black and white and like the color at full saturation is already like in that circle of desaturated. And I want you to kind of guess how red the coat that Hornet is wearing is. Because when I actually color picked it, it's not that saturated. And If we put it to full saturation, like I'm guessing on the Beamer it's not that extreme, but if you see this on the screen, like it looks so wrong. And that is due to colors affecting one another. There is this concept of complementary colors. So if you put a red on green, the red is ultimately going to pop more. If you put an orange on blue, the same thing happens. So for example, if we put the red on green, like of course the visibility is automatically way better than if we put it on a brown. But then you'll be saying like, oh, Simone, but I can still see the character and everything very clearly. Ha ha ha. And that is because Silksong looks good in black and white, and that is why that is so important. Okay. Color is relative. I want you to guess the front plane of that torso. You already know what's coming. Trick question. It's all the same color. It's just your mind does not compute color. Next slide. This is also a really nice painting. It has these lovely greens in sunset. They're not greens, they're all yellows. And I'm pretty sure if we were to color pick that sky, that's not a blue, that's a gray. So don't trust color. but the good thing is, like, because it's all relative, like you can really play around with it. Okay, last learning lesson about color. Brightness, so how bright versus how dark is your color. And you would guess, like, this is all of the hues, like all of the colors at full saturation, right? So what happens if we turn this to black and white? You would expect everything to just be like the same key, the same gray, like 50% gray. It's not, unfortunately. Even artists struggle with this when they first realize this. Like I saw this YouTube thumbnail, it was like, yeah, blue is kind of what. But the good thing for you, the only thing that you kind of need to keep in mind about colors is be careful when using blue or yellow, because these two will increase your contrast and in turn affect your game's visibility. I brought some examples. Blue is really cool if you want to create rich and deep shadows without adding just a ton of black to your game. Versus yellow is really good because the light from the sun is, as you know, white, but because it gets scattered in the atmosphere here on Earth, we perceive it as yellow, yellow-orange-ish. So if you add yellow light, you're automatically creating that warm atmosphere. And if you pair that, for example, like Townscaper is doing with reddish shadows, then you're automatically having like a very soft, nice look. One more note about blue, as you can see with Hollow Knight, blue is a very dark color by itself. So if you pair that with white, you can really use that to bring in more contrast. So the white character on a blue background automatically sticks out more. Yeah, this is just one more note about how to shade your game. Just make a deliberate choice of like, this is going to be my shadow color, this is going to be my light color. If you can, avoid black and white because that muddies colors and like makes them very desaturated and grayish. And if that's a look that you're going for, then just do that. But if you can, just experiment around with light and shadow colors because that can automatically make your game like way more stylish. Okay. Last slide about like design basics, and then we move on to stylization. There's basically only three shapes. Triangles are very like dynamic, they communicate like things that are fast or that are dangerous, like spiky. Boxes are very sturdy and unmoving, and like round shapes are bouncy and mostly harmless. We use this a lot in character design, but you can pretty much use this for anything. And of course there is other shapes, but you can pretty much make any shape by combining or subtracting these three from one another. And yeah, I brought another example from Ori and the Blind Forest. Which of these can you walk on? Yeah, it's the round mushroom, of course, and it's not the spiky red whatever this plant is. So this one does damage, this one's a platform. Also notice the rim light contrast, like this communicates you can collide with these. All right, stylization. Okay, so we talked about contrast, color, and shapes, and these are kind of the three basics that you need in order for example, create a character design. And now I want to look at some tips of how we keep track of stylization. You probably all know this character, that's Misty from Pokemon. Her character design is pretty iconic. She has the orange hair color. She doesn't always dress the same way, but it's usually like some kind of swimwear. But like these two characters, like they don't look that similar. And what's happening here is like the design is the same, but the proportions are different. And one thing that we do is we always keep the head size in mind. So for the one design, I noticed that her torso to like her belly button, like her torso is the same size as her head, and that's consistent in both designs. But then if I look at the legs, I'm like, oh, one design has like three heads and the other one is like 2 1/4 maybe. And this is a ratio that you can use to, for example, keep your characters consistent, because if I make more characters in that style, I'm like, oh, I'll just keep that ratio in mind. This is also kind of important and is going to affect everything in your game. In Animal Crossing New Horizons, for example, your characters are like these little chibi blobs, basically. But they need to enter and exit a house. So, of course, your door needs to be the size to accommodate the character. Okay, then I'll just make the house the whole door, basically. But then we move on to an example like the fan. Characters can actually interact with that fan. And what they did here is, like, if you look at a real-life fan, it's very, very detailed. So they just started removing details and making the buttons bigger and chunkier until it looked like the character's hand could actually push one of the buttons without touching the whole panels. And this is kind of the secret, I would say, of how you go about stylization. The best thing you can do is find a real-life reference of what you're stylizing and then have a stylized thing next to it. Because I can give this to another artist and they will know, okay, I'm just going to look for a building front from whatever setting we decided on. And then, okay, like the house walls, they're not going to be straight. Okay, I'm going to like slightly tilt them. Okay, we don't have any round windows, so I'll just make them angular, I guess. And the same thing here, this is an example from a game that we're currently working on, Virtual Cottage 2. You can kind of see like I removed a lot of the detail from the desk and basically just kept the elements that I think are necessary, and I can give this to our working student and give her a photo of another desk and she can pretty much emulate that. This is the secret. This is how you come up with an art style, and there's not really a guaranteed way of like, there's no secret recipe. Like, you just try to find a really good reference image that you like, and then you just sit down and write down what you like about it. You just take a lot of notes. Like, art direction is a lot about looking at things and are they looking right? Yes or no? And if I can't answer that question, I'm just going to check my sheet. Does the thing have a strong silhouette? Yeah, okay, check. And this is pretty much how I go about designing each and every element. And this is kind of the secret, like you just have to work on it. If you have one asset from your game and you really like that asset, you just write down, you start looking at it and you write down what you like about it. Is it rounded corners? Is it the colors? Is it like the way that it's modeled? And then you compare every other asset to the list that you just made. And that's the whole secret. And the more you do this, the better you get at it. Now I want to talk about the part that I've also done a couple of times and which is probably also really interesting if you're making a new game from scratch. So world building refers not to how your game looks, but the world that it takes place in. So like, for example, Undertale, the world would be the underground, and nowhere would it say that it's pixel art. And world building, I usually start with the setting, and it always helps if your setting is grounded in reality. For this project, it was like 1950s America. We split it into small town, farmland, and then something else. And we were just looking up references from that era and then separating them further. Like, what do the buildings look like? What's the special thing about the buildings? Can we have any, like, the details down below? And we just add to that. So this is how you would kind of do it for a smaller game. And then for a bigger project, the style guide, I don't know, I think it was 100 pages at the end. We needed to design 7 different kingdoms or 7 different regions. So what we did, we had this main slide where we were like, this is the shapes that we are going to use for the design. This is the materials that the people from this region are using. This is the color. And then we also had separate slides for the whole architecture, for the environment. And we did that for all of the regions. So like you had to read like 5 pages, but then afterwards you had a pretty good grasp of like what this place is versus the other region. And I think the last thing that I really want to talk about is mood boards and reference boards, because those two often kind of get mixed up. And mood boards, I would say, are mainly about vibes. So I put this together for like a hypothetical cozy cafe, nature theme, cat, whatever game. And for mood boards, I would use colors, I would use patterns. I've done mood boards where I've embedded videos and music, because this is about creating atmosphere, right? I want to use this to communicate the vision to the whole team, not just to a creative director or to the other artists. Like, I want to be, like, I probably would add even more stuff to this. And, like, if I show this to someone, like, I want them to understand what the atmosphere is of walking into this fictional cafe that we're going to create. And if I then move into reference board, like, I'm still trying to find stuff that kind of has the same vibe, but I'm being very, very thorough with marking, like, hey, this photo, the tiles are what is important, and that everything is stacked neatly. This photo, this is what's important. The last one, don't look at the coffee machine, don't look at what's down there. Like, it's about that the owner of the shops chooses quirky art. Like, this is the most important part. Like, with your references, you want to be super intentional and actually tell people, like, this is what I mean. With the mood board, for example, you can be a bit more like, it's vibes. Like, you get it. And then for style references, I'm also trying to be very, very thorough of what I want. Like, this image is used for perspective that I want, this is the line art that I like, and this is the colors that I want. And for example, for this hypothetical project, I would probably even take that image in the middle, put it into Photoshop, and slap some color filters on it. And like, don't take other people's art, mess with it, and then post it back online. Like, that's not that cool. But you can totally, if it's for communicating within your own team, just take other people's art and like mess with it, like try to understand why they made it the way that it is, and like use it to communicate your own vision. Yeah, I think that was a lot. And I probably forgot a lot about things. And if you take away like 2 things from this talk, always check your game in black and white, because this is so much more important than like all of your assets being perfectly consistent with one another. And grab real life references, because that just elevates your setting. Like, if you sit down in front of a paper, you're like, I don't know how to make an asset. Like, just look it up. Just look up like what the real life thing looks like, and then you can probably go from there. The extra bits, study other games. Silksong is a really great game. Ori and the Blind Forest is like a masterclass in like how to do the whole black and white contrast thing. use 100% white and black very intentionally because it's gonna grab attention. The same with 100% saturation. Like, I think if you have a game that's very like in your face, just toning down some of the saturation can sometimes make it a lot more pleasant to look at. I don't know if we have time for the Q&A, but I promise I'll be around for the whole day. And if you just want to show me screenshots and talk more about like stylization in detail, I'll be around.
All right, thank you, Simone.
Thank you.
If that doesn't make us an art director yet, at least we have a big step towards being an art director. Thank you again. And just about in a few minutes, we continue our art journey with Janusz, who talks about ray tracing for 2D games. Right. Thanks again.
So do we have time for the Q&A? Probably not, right?
No.
Okay, then just catch me.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.